this time for you because it made a huge impact on me. And yeah, I'm trying to think if I left anything off. That was a really quick summary. That's me in a nutshell. I'm going to share my Myers-Briggs. Well, okay, so my Myers-Briggs, my letters, ENTJ. Right? ENTJ. There's my letters. So for those of you that don't know me, my name is Paul Ranheim. That's my brother. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I grew up in a family up in Seattle, Washington, Snohomish, Washington, actually. I have a brother, a mom and dad there. I grew up and spent time in the U.S., spent some time overseas. Eventually, when I took time to go to college, I went to the school called Luther University, where that guy went. I ended up studying a number of different things, but what I settled on studying was music and theology. While I was there, I was involved with some sports and also leading worship. When I finished that, I thought, what should I do? So I ended up actually working up in Alaska on a train, and then I just have this love for Spanish. And so I was like, what better way than to go to Central America and study? So I went down to Central America and I studied Spanish. When I finished doing that, I thought, you know what, it's time for me to go on and do my graduate work. So I headed out to St. Louis, went to Covenant Seminary, got my Master's of Divinity, and now I work at a church in Santa Barbara, California. I'm a pastor there and a worship leader there. And my Myers-Briggs, INFP. And so why do we do that little thing? We kind of do this every year. We do these introductions and show how incredibly similar my brother and I are. We are very similar. We have a lot of similar interests, and we've had very similar lives. And yet, our personality is almost polar opposites. Almost polar opposites. We've actually led similar, the same ministries, and done so from a personality perspective that's very, very, very different. So part of us saying that is because we both work in leadership right now. John's the vice president of the Covenant Seminary, I work as a pastor. We both are in leadership of our organizations, and he's an extrovert, I'm an introvert. He's a sensing person. No, he's a thinker, I'm a feeler, etc., etc. There can be effective leadership regardless of what your personality is. And so as you look at these, especially if this is your first time looking at your Myers-Briggs, there always is this temptation to say, which one is the best one? Like, which one's the good one? Which one should I try to be? And that's not the case at all. None of these are good and none of them are bad. None of these are like, if you're this personality, you are a leader, and if you're not, sorry, you can leave camp. No, like, you can all be here, regardless of what your personality is. So you have, you should have your letters in front of you. And one other thing I'll say, before I jump into the letters, what is this Myers-Briggs thing? Why do we even use it? Why do we take time at this camp to talk about what your personality is? And we do it because we want you to help understand how God has designed people. We want you to understand how God has designed people because fundamentally we believe that it's going to help you understand who He's made you to be, and it's going to help you understand who God has made everyone else to be, and it's going to help you understand how to relate to everyone else who's so different than you. And so understanding personality is insightful because it helps you see, like, oh man, this is how God designed me, and I have within this personality just a lot of strengths that go along with it, but there's also a lot of tendencies towards weakness. And when we understand those, we can better understand, like, where we can serve Him best, where we fit in, and we can understand how to communicate with others. So if anyone is in here is interested in, I don't know, like dating boys or girls, whatever it may be, pay attention. This is going to help you a lot. It's going to help save some heartbreak, too. You want to say anything on that?
My wife, so I'm an ENTJ. My wife, Elizabeth, is an
got that J. You kill each other. He's right.
It's not gonna tell you who you should date or who you should marry or anything like that, but it will tell you how you can communicate more effectively with them, how you can love them better, how you can serve them better, how they can love you better. One last thing, actually. These things in here, they aren't either ors. So some of you guys have said, like, I might be on the line. That's totally fine. So these are more of like a spectrum. You could be an extrovert. You could be an introvert. You could be kind of someplace in between. And so some of you will have like 10 out of 10 on extrovert. That's fine. Like Scott Schindler up front here, 10 out of 10 on the extrovert. Some of you guys might be 2 out of 10 on the extrovert. That's fine. You're still an E. Or you might be right in the middle. That's totally fine. These are preferences, and they go on a spectrum. So let's look at these. You've got these your letters in front of you, and I'll have John chime in whenever he would like to as well. But the first letters you have, extrovert versus introvert. This is one of them that's the most commonly misunderstood. I think a lot of people think of extroversion as being outgoing and introversion as being shy, and that is not the case at all. Extroversion and introversion, this talks about what things energize you, what things kind of fuel you inside. So for extroverts, they get their energy from things that are outside of them, from activities, from people. My brother is an extrovert in that way. So my brother, he goes to a conference. If he's around big, large groups of people, at the end of the day, he can be at a conference all day long, talking to people all day long, and he gets done, and he comes to me and says, "What do we do next?" He's just ready to go. I mean, this is fuel for his fire. I, on the other hand, I'm an introvert. So if you're on the introverted side, that means you get your energy from kind of the inner world. You get recharged from what's going on inside of you. We tend to be people that prefer more smaller groups versus large groups, or one-on-one conversations versus being at a big group of people, being with big group of people. One of the kind of interesting thing here, extroverts tend to be external processors. They want to have everything outside so they can kind of see it. And introverts tend to be internal processors. They have to kind of think about it inside, or maybe feel about it inside, before it actually makes sense to them. Me, if I'm at a big conference all day, at the end of the day, I'm spent. I'm wiped out. It's like, give me some alone time. Give me a book. Let me just sit by myself and think. Or let me read, let me watch a movie. Just let me be alone. John's the opposite. We know this about each other now.
Well, I'll say this too. So my wife, perfect example, Elizabeth, she's an I, but she's not a high I. So she's kind of an IE. So if she was here, she did high school and college ministry for years. She would love to talk to all of you ladies. Okay? She would go sit with you and talk to you, and you'd be like, "Wow, you're such an introvert or an extrovert. You're such a people person. You're an extrovert." Okay. Well, what Paul just said. If she and I are talking together, right, and this is where Paul's right, the better you can understand this about yourself, and the better you can understand this about other people, the better you can be in a relationship with the opposite sex. I'm just going to tell you. Because if I'm talking with my wife, I'll come home from a day at work, and I'll sit down, and I'll say, "Let me tell you about my day." And she just goes, "Mm-hmm, mm-hmm." And so she listens. I'm a verbal processor. Talk it out. She, on the other hand, if we're going to make a decision about something, she doesn't want to sit there and talk it out with me. She wants to go in the other room. She wants to think about it for a while, come up with what she's decided, and then she'll come back. Okay? Now, that's a processing question, but it's our personalities in play with one another, and as I've learned that about her, I've actually given her more room. Be her her be me, right? And vice versa. So now she knows I'm just going to come home and go, pa 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 pa, Mr. Clockhead. And then I know if she doesn't say anything, it's okay, because she may just need to go journal and get her ideas out, and then she'll come back and talk about it.
That's good. Yeah, I gotta kind of reiterate one thing John said there. This has nothing to do with your love for people. I'm an introvert. I absolutely love people. I'm one of the most relational people you'll ever meet. I love being with people. I love going out to coffee with folks. I do it all the time for my job, and I love my job because of it. But I'm an introvert through and through. I do need those downtimes to help recharge my internal battery. And the same thing, I'll say to anyone, this is specifically for folks that are introverts like myself, if you got an eye, I think especially when we start talking about leadership, it's tempting to think that, I think this is the spot where it's most tempting to think this, that extroversion is good and introversion is bad, but somehow being an introvert is a weakness, and that's not true at all. Some of the world's greatest leaders, some of the world's greatest preachers, some of the greatest leaders are introverts. And also doesn't say anything about being in front of people. I'm an introvert. I love being in front of people. I love talking to you right now. This is great. Being an introvert does not mean that you're a weak leader. It does not mean that you're weak. But it doesn't mean that your leadership is going to look different. And the sooner that you can realize that you're an introvert, and that's a good thing, and you kind of embrace that, the healthier you'll be able to lead, the more effectively you'll be able to lead just how God has designed you.
I don't know if any of you know the name Brian Chappell, Dr. Brian Chappell. You know that name. He was the president of Covenant Seminary, where I currently work. I worked with him for about 6 years. He's one of this generation's top preachers. Okay, he's written books on preaching. He's the president of the seminary. He can preach the lights out. All right. He's an introvert. He and I would travel together, and a lot of people would hear him speak in the pulpit. And they would assume that the way he spoke there, which seems very, they would label that as extroversion, would also translate when he would come down on the pulpit and then he would talk to them, okay? And that he was a wonderful communicator there. But he was also an introvert. He wanted some alone time. And he and I worked well together because he told me this. He's like, I just love being on the road with you, because the way it would work is he would preach and then he would be like, okay, now I gotta get some alone time. And I would go work the crowd. I got to stand up and be like, I'm done. Hey, keep seeing him. I go talk to him. Sit right there. And what Paul's referring to is a lot of like the public leaders that you'll see. If we were to go through like our presidents, there's some interesting things online. You can look at all the like Myers Briggs of presidents. You'd be surprised. It's this total even mix, but you would not think it. We sometimes have a stereotype of what we think a leader or a CEO or a whatever is going to be, and it has nothing to do. Yes.
Can I just ask you guys a question? Sorry. So first of all, I know exactly what the person you're referring to make that impression, John. But and I've heard you guys do this for a couple of years, and I've learned something each time. I feel like I've come this year with a little bit of a question. And one of the things, Paul, you say every year, hopefully, that eyes are not less worthy, valued, helpful, leader quality-esque than ease, and that could run all the way down all the letters. And I think that's great, and that's a biblical perspective. Could I ask how you guys deal, and maybe specifically Paul, how you deal, though, with existing in a world that doesn't have biblical values? Because the world probably doesn't value certain characteristics as much as other characteristics in with respect to this conversation about leadership. How do you deal with that?
That's a great question. I don't have a great answer. I think the point you're making is very true. In our culture, we culturally love extroverts. We affirm them. We say that that's a strength. And culturally, we say introversion is a weakness. And that's not only in our broader culture, it also exists in our church culture. Though I think that that's being challenged more and more. There are some people who've written a couple books. There's a guy who wrote a book called Introverts in the Church that's speaks to that exact thing. I'm a third of the way into it. It's really good so far, and that's why I don't have a great answer for you. I think part of it is, what I could say is, for myself, is realizing that what I said is true, that introversion really is a good, worthwhile thing. And then also being able to just affirm in my schedule, my calendar, to say, wait, I actually need, I look at my day, and if I'm with people all day, it is going to burn me out. That's not the way that the Lord designed me to do ministry. And so for me, it's actually setting times and having to remind myself I shouldn't feel guilty about needing time to journal or time to write music or time to just work alone by myself or to study. These things that are really life-giving to me, I need to realize that that's actually a worthwhile use of my time. So that's practically how it's working out in my life, but it's not a great answer. It is a great question, though.
In on that a little bit. John used an example last year of talking about running a meeting and how extroverts tend to process things very quickly and things pop into their head and they just say them. And so you tend to kind of run over people in that sense, or you have that tendency. It's not that you always do that. Whereas an introvert will come at the problem a little bit differently and take maybe arrive at the same solution, but take a little bit slower and maybe choose words more carefully. And so it's an advantage to the introvert in those situations because they actually think through more carefully and can be less harmful in certain situations.
Yeah, because they have the tendency to do that more.
Yeah.
I speak to that. In probably the last 5 years, my job has been one where I've ever seen more teams. So I've had more meetings. I'm running the meeting. And I know David has, he does a lot of team meetings as well. I know a number of the pastors here and others could say the same thing. I've had to know that my tendency is to do exactly what Evangelism has said. Okay? My tendency is to go, all right, let's go. Let's get this done. And if you don't speak up, you're not going to get hurt. Okay? We're going to go. I'll tell you what. We don't get places, we don't get stuff done nearly as well if I'm doing that. Because I'm railroading people, I'm not giving people a voice. And when I'm engaging with people and realizing, wait a minute, how do I engage the other people who don't have my exact personality and aren't going to jump in exactly with me in that moment? If I slow down a second and go, okay, hang on a minute, am I not hearing somebody? Do we need to take a time out right now and let people go process? Because I'm processing fast. Maybe we need to come back. Can we come back in an hour? Let's give. And so to then stop the meeting and have people go, okay, they're going to go internally process for a minute and come back, it ends up being a much stronger dynamic. You see how that's helpful? David, you're raising your hand.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, just probably saying the same thing, but as an extrovert, kind of a little bit over on the east side, I will tend to... you know, we think with our mouths open, right? We do our thinking while our mouth is moving, and we say dumb things that way sometimes. But so stuff comes out of our mouth; it's not necessarily a fully formed thought. Whereas introverts are going to tend to think first and then speak. So, like, if I'm going to get together with some people and we're going to work on something together, I try to make sure I at least give out some. These are some of the questions we're going to be wrestling with, or this is the agenda, or these are the things we're going to look at. Give them enough time ahead of time to think about those things before you walk into the meeting. Sometimes we'll even do stuff in a meeting where we'll no one talks, we just write. Like, okay, here's a question, think about this for a minute, let's take 5 minutes and write down some ideas on that. Then we put them out. And that's it, you know, so that you can actually plan ways to do stuff that really helps the, you know, the introverts in a group to also contribute.
As an introvert, I know that's super helpful. I actually go around and ask people for the agenda now, like, hey, so what? Can you give me anything about what we're going to talk about? Because it's really helpful for me to know. I will. It sounds like we're kind of pointing the fingers at the extroverts of kind of railroading things. I'm going to point the fingers at the introverts as well. If the extroverts have a tendency to think with their mouth open, the introverts have a tendency to think with their mouth closed and then never open their mouth. And so for any introverts in here, my urge would be, yes, take that time internally to process, but then speak up, because the extroverts need it. This world needs it, this church needs it. They need those ideas that have kind of been mulling around in introverts' minds that are coming out as like full-formed thoughts. They need those. And so there are times in meetings that I personally have to say, hey, can we slow down? I need to share something now. I know we've been talking about for 20 minutes, but I finally have the thought. Pardon me. So, yeah, I think we need to move on. So that's the extrovert, introvert. The next one, actually, there's the next sets. There's these next two sets, sensing and intuiting and thinking and feeling. These are the only two that are related to one another, and they have to do with the decision-making process. So all of life is making decisions. So the first half of this has to do with how do you gather information to make the decision, and then the next two letters is how do you actually make the decision once you have that information gathered. So the sensing and intuitive, it's how we prefer to take information in. The sensing, they pay attention to information taken in directly through the senses. So all five senses, that is what they pay attention to, the hard facts. They focus on what is or on what was, like it's very tangible to them. Whereas the intuitive folks, they tend to pay attention to their sixth senses or to kind of listen to hunches. They focus on what might be the possible. They tend to look at the big picture, whereas the sensing folks tend to look at the details. So what's this look like? I shared this example last year. Hopefully it's helpful. John Elizabeth, they just bought a new house. They just moved in a new house. You can cheer. But they've been house shopping for like, how long?
5 years.
5 years. And so they've had a chance to shop quite a bit. His wife is an S. She's sensing. So she'll look at houses and go through them, and as she sees them, she sees what's in the, it comes through five senses. The very tangible data in front of her. This house has 3 bedrooms, it has 1 bathroom, it costs so much money, so much square footage, and that's just not big enough for our family. So that's the decision, basically. So she's taking in it through what is tangibly in front of her. My brother walks into houses, he walks into everything, and it's not what's in front of him. Like he goes, yeah, I know it's a 3-bedroom, 1-bath, but we're gonna add like 3 more bedrooms over there and 4 bathrooms, and then we're gonna put a couple more garages. I mean, it's the world of possibility with him. So the sensing, looking at the tangibles, what's right in front of what is or what was, the intuitive folks tend to see the bigger picture of the possible, bowl of that's in my throat, of what could be. Now, how does, I haven't asked this before, but how can these two people, maybe not in this example or in this example, how can they communicate? How can they serve one another knowing this? Well, if you're just an intuitive person, your preference is going to be thinking about the possible. So you're going to hear someone that's just talking about the tangible things, be like, well, that's pointless. You're missing the big picture. You're missing all these things that we're going to do. And kind of think, the tendency is to think that their opinion actually isn't valid, that their information they've gathered isn't valid or it's less valid than the ones that you've come. And the person on the other side is the exact same. Like, hey, listen, this is the concrete evidence. Get out of your dream world. Come down to reality. This is the information that matters. So as these two people speak to one another, there has to be a recognition that, wait, this person's made and designed differently than I am. God's made them see possible things, the things possible in this house or in whatever it might be. And I know it's not my way of gathering information, but maybe I can listen to that and see some value in how they've gathered this information. Sensing, intuitive.
So practically speaking, I don't know if you've ever been in an interview or you've ever seen somebody go through an interview, okay? I've begun to experience So an interview, a learning that this has meant for me, as I've been interviewing people, okay, for a job, I've learned to rely on people that are different from me as we're engaging with someone. So I might be listening to Scott, and he's interviewing for a job, and I hear Scott saying things to me, and I'm going, okay, great, I'm hearing all the possibilities. Well, he could do this, and he could do this, and that'd be wonderful, and that would be, and we, okay, great. And we finish the interview, and I come out of it going, man, that would be a great guy to have because I could see him there, 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 there.
I'm learning to turn to the person to my right who is a different letter than me and say, hey, how'd that strike you? You know what that, if there's an S in the room, you know what the S will say? Say, well, had this, did not have that. Had that, you know, has this education, does not have that experience. I mean, like, there's the paper, you know, like, here's the facts, Jack. And so sometimes that's real helpful because I might have just dreamed him in a totally different job. It was like, well, I don't know, I can see him, he's going to be president. Like, yeah, but you just need somebody to go buy the Costco run. I mean, like, he needs a valid driver's license and a car. But again, some of this, it's all about you, but it's really not about you. I think one of the biggest strengths is knowing, here's who I am and here's my weakness or potential weakness, and here's these other people out here and here's their potential strengths and actual strengths. Here's the other thing while I've got the mic. With my wife and I, this has been really helpful, okay, in showing each other grace. Because sometimes if in a relationship, if she is responding to me in a particular way, I can get really angry about it and say, you're wrong. Okay? And then I can come out hard. Now, what I've begun to realize is that actually, no, she's not wrong. She's just different. So the more I've been able to understand my wife's personality different than mine, and actually with the whole broader spectrum, I've actually been able to value when she says things or engages in things or values things differently than I do. Here's an example. Okay. I already told you I have this affinity for lists. I like to make lists. I like to get things done. I'll stay up till 11:30 at night to paint the bedroom that has to be painted because we've got to get up to 2:30 in the morning to get that crazy thing painted because I want to get it done. Anything, get the thing done. Here's another thing. I may come home from work. I got 5 things on my list, okay? But there's only 25 minutes. I've got 25 minutes until I got to take my son to his baseball practice. You know what goes through my mind? Well, I can do 2 of those things. I think I can fit that in. Yeah, I can do it. I will totally do it. Let's go. Okay? So I'm going. Boom. I'm going to get it done. My wife, on the other hand, came from a family that was not nearly that intense. Her values, when we first got married, she was like, John, do you just know how to be? I was like, be? Be what? She's like, no. Just to be here. Just be. Sit. Be. Don't do. Be. And to me, it's like, well, this is pointless. I'm not being productive. Aha. We had different values. What she would look at in that 20 minutes before I would take my son to practice is the value of saying, John, instead of trying to get 2 things off your list and being productive, why don't you just sit down here with your son on the floor and play Legos for 15 minutes. It's going to take you 5 minutes to find his shoes. Anyways, but just take 15 minutes to be, just be with him. Be with him. Her values, which were communicated through her personality, has been a huge growing thing for me. But I began to value her as I began to understand her personality. And guess what? This really helps your communication too.
So S and N, how you gather the information to make your decision. Moving on, how do you make your decisions? This is the thinking and feeling side. This is how we prefer to evaluate information and make decisions. This is a great example of John and I here. John is a high T, I am a high F. We're in very different ends of the spectrum. Thinking, the thinkers, they tend to make decisions based on the logical, rational, objective way of doing things. So they see, whether they see the facts in front of them or they see that world of possibilities, either one, they're going to say, well, what's most logical? What's most rational? We go with that. The feelers on the other side, they tend to make decisions based on personal value-oriented ways. The personal value-oriented ways. So they're going to care about more about relationships and things. So I say, well, I know that those are all the facts. I know that that's the logical thing to do. But don't you see how it's going to make so-and-so feel? And for me, that's going to be much higher on my priorities than doing the most logical thing. The thinkers tend to like the world of ideas. The feelers tend to like the world of feelings. The thinkers have a tendency towards, well, one of their challenges is that they have a tendency towards being oblivious to people's feelings. They have a tendency to disregard, even if they are aware of the feelings, they have a tendency to disregard the feelings of others because they just don't think that it's important. Even if it's like a value-based like decision that this feeler's making, like, well, that's not important because this is the rational, logical thing to do. The feelers, on the other hand, they don't do well with, their tendency is to not do well with conflict or things where people's feelings are going to get in the way. And so if there's conflict, they tend to kind of sidestep it. They tend to see the logical decisions as being pretty cold and ruthless. Like, well, you don't care at all. It is not true. My brother's a very caring man, but sometimes through my feeling lens, it looks as though he is very uncaring. I have to remind myself of the truth. So how can these two people serve each other knowing this? My brother and I, we've actually worked at this. We've actually sat down across the table and said, we don't communicate well on this. You're a thinker, I'm a feeler. How can we communicate better? Because it seems like we're just flying past each other. And literally, our conversation started by him saying, okay, Paul, what do you think about, and then he just stops and goes, Paul, how do you feel about blank? I mean, it's like putting training wheels on a bicycle. How do you feel about blank? Well, I have a tendency to do the exact opposite. I'm like, yeah, John, I know you're talking about all these ideas and like things going on around the world, but like, how does it make you feel?
He asked me the question. My wife asked me this question too. I had the same answer. He said, John, how does that make you feel? And I said, well, I think I feel. It was pretty good. I think I feel happy.
So there's lots of differences there that can be drawn out from the feeler and the thinker side. But at the end of the day, one of the ways that we can love someone that's the opposite, a better from us, is affirming that their decision-making process is a good one. That I can look at my brother and say, I actually realized that the way that you process that information, you arrived at that decision, it's actually a really good thing. It was a good choice that you made. And the other side has to look at the field and say, wait a second, you're deeply caring people, and you're looking at things beyond this logical decision of this, we're gonna buy this because this is the information that we have here. But the information doesn't make the page is that, well, that's really gonna hurt so-and-so. And so for the other person, for the T's to look at the F's and say, wait, your way of making decision actually cares about the relational community. It cares about this body, whatever it might be, in a much deeper way than T's normally do. There's the T's and F's. Yes, sir. Both sides of the decision. What do you think? You relate to that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, my wife, so my wife is a high F as well. And I think, part of what you're saying is in understanding both in how we would make decisions and, like you just said, how you would feel on the opposite side of it, at the core of both is just being able to validate that. So if someone's a thinker and they're leading into the decision, they've thought it through, they made the decision, and then now they are confirmed. It is a confirmation of everything that they preceded that moment by. Whereas a feeler is feeling it, I'm not really sure, or maybe you are very sure, whether you're one or the other, to just acknowledge and know that is actually normal for that personality type. Literally, God has made that personality type to do that very thing. That honors how God has demonstrated his fingerprint in this world on a variety of people. And again, I said this at the beginning, understanding your personality actually is more about showing grace to others. Because you can know your own tendencies, your shortcomings. You can know other people's tendencies and shortcomings. You can offer grace to them in that way.
I think it's a good point. I think also the T's, once the decision's made, like, they've kind of, they're done. The feelers, once the decision's made, they have to deal with the relational consequences of all the decision. And it's going to be rolled out to person after person after person, especially if you're in an organization like a church. You make a decision, that's going to affect a lot of people, and the F's in the world are going to be trying to track those people down, making sure everything's going okay. These are like, they'll deal with it. It's the right decision. And I'm really glad, I work with a T, I'm really glad I do, because things actually move forward. Because otherwise, it goes, well, this is going to affect too many people. Like, and when he makes the decision, he's firm on it. Like, yeah, that's right, and people are going to have to deal with it. It's like, well, I'm going to go help those people deal with it. That's why we work together. So yeah, there's the whole decision-making process. But the final set of letters that will end up here is on the J and the P. This is judging and perceiving. I tend to think that these are the least helpful names for what they actually mean, especially judging. Glad I'm not a J. Wait, maybe I am. So the judging versus perceiving, these are like the lifestyle orientations. This talks about how you live out your lives. The J's tend to live in very organized, planned ways. So they are the people that if you walk in their bedroom, the floor is clean, everything's put away, it is a nice bedroom, it looks like the magazines. They're the people that tend to keep calendars. They have they have calendars and they keep them. Like, they actually go to the things that are on the calendar. Even if it's like, this hour, I'm going to read this book. The J's tend to do it. They show up to things on time. They make lists. The perceiving folks, they tend to live in much more spontaneous, flexible, laid-back ways. And so even though P's might have a calendar, they tend to be like, oh, I don't really care if I follow it. Like, I know I have that event, but I don't care if it runs over, no problem. I arrive late, no problem. So P's tend to actually be late to things. Actually, the professor that taught me this, he said this in the PE class, he's like, so I know that all the J's, you're gonna be here on time. And all you P's, you're gonna be 5 minutes late. I don't hold it against you. It's just the way you roll. That's me. I'm late. I'm 5 to 10 minutes late to every single thing I do. I actually was played music with a friend of mine, and he was a very strong J. And if there was a party, or if we had a rehearsal, or we're getting together, he would arrive 10 minutes early, 10 to 15 minutes early. For him to be late was to show up on time, and that made him really nervous to show up on time. Me, if there's a party, I will never show up on time. I don't know if I've ever shown up on time to a party. I always come 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes late. An hour late, hour and a half late. a few days late.
Every year!
An example, when I was packing for this, it takes 3 hours to pack to come to something like this. Part of it is because I'm also an end, and I'm thinking about the world of possibility. Like, oh, look at that, I could do that. So maybe I should bring these. And I want to be spontaneous about my packing, and I want to have like these snap decisions and live with them. I want to live in the moment. John packs in like 3 minutes. I've never seen someone pack so fast. Another example along the packing theme is our family as a whole, we function as J's. I'm the black sheep in the family. When I realized that, it was so freeing. I was like, oh, that's why. All these years. When my family, we go on vacation, we would have lists of everything. They're saved on the computers to this day. And we're going on the vacation to the San Juan Islands. We print out the San Juan Islands vacation packing list. And it's 3 pages. And it has every single thing on there. And it's organized. And we just look at it. And okay, put that in the car, put that in the car, put that. I mean, it is. And when it's time to go, we go. I mean, we leave on time. The family that we grew up with, it was kind of like my second family, and maybe I felt like they were my second family because I related so much to them. When they would go on vacation, well, I should back up. When we went on vacation, we plan out, like, there's this vacation we do every December in Canada. We go skiing in Canada. We book the place a full year in advance. All our vacations are booked a year in advance. I can't book something a week in advance. They book a whole year in advance. This other family that would go on vacation, the family in our church grew up with, when they would go on vacation, they would decide to go on vacation the week of, and sometimes the day of, and be like, you know what sounds nice? Let's go over to Lake Chelan. Evangeline knows his family. Yeah, let's go to Lake Chelan. When? Today. For the week. And they would just go home, and they're packing. They have no packing list. They just grab the stuff. Half hour later, out the door, and they're at Lake Chelan for a week. Two very different ways of going on vacation. One very planned, one very spontaneous. Both of them, great ways to go on vacation. There's the J's and P's. You want to say something?
Part of what the value that you can have in both of these camps, both of these kind of letter groups, and we would find it with our friends, the friends who would go to the lake. Okay, and we would talk about vacation because it's, you know, it's funny that literally my mother would plan everything out to a T. You had to get that reservation a full year out because the state park was closed and there was no room in the inn and there was nothing. And this other family would be like, yeah, let's go, 5 minutes. They would always find something. They did not put their tent on the highway.
A lot of times their tent was right next to ours.
It was bizarre. They always figured it out. Like, it worked out. So now I'll flip it, okay? This same family and our family. So my mother, I don't know if you knew Paul's adopted. Our mother, she throws a mean Christmas party. She throws down, okay? She does Christmas. Here's what happens. She plans for weeks for a Christmas party. And so when you come over for Christmas at the Ranheim house, okay, Karen Ranheim has been cooking literally for a week. She has pre-cooked. So there are like 9 different things that are going to be hot on that table. There is china out. There's the red tablecloth stuff matches. There's plenty of chairs. Like, it is a full tilt party. And if you come, I didn't really see this as a kid. I didn't have eyes to see it, but I see it now as an adult. If you came to our house, when our extended family came to our house, they felt very special because things had been done so intentionally for them with all the details of this party. You know, their name was on a little name badge at the table. They had a special gift under the tree. They had, I mean, like, all the little things, my mom would take care of all the little things. She She did that well. Okay? So her J letter was in full effect and rocking. Okay? And she was blessing people with that J letter of hers. Okay? Flip side, family or church. That wasn't there. They didn't have that letter. It was a P family versus a J family. But let me tell you what they did exceptionally well. I grew up in it. An evangelist grew up in it. After church, okay, this family almost every Sunday would just tell somebody who'd come to church with them, or just the neighbor, or somebody guy walking the dog, hey, come on over for dinner. There were people in their kitchen all the time, and those people felt welcome. Those people got to experience the grace of God through hospitality because this family was in full effect and rocking the P they were meant to be. You know what I mean? And that's recorded in perpetuity on the internet. But it's true. Like, people could come over anytime. I remember going there, they would just make a 50-gallon drum of chili or like pancakes for dinner. Or, you know, they had 15 gallons of ice cream. They just had this huge fridge. I don't know, you know, they just bought food for no reason. But they always had it. They were always ready for people to come over to their house. And I know, as Paul and I have reflected on that, so when you think about how do you bless and care for people out of the way that God's made you, I mean, those were two kind of ways of going, okay, this is not one better than the other. This is one working in complement with the other. For a deep purpose. Now, and I'll tell you what, I'm a J. I'm not a crazy high J. Actually, my mom's a crazy high J. Like, I'm a J, I'm on this side of the line. So if you go in my room, okay, I don't have every sock in the drawer, like, you know, oh no, that one's 2 inches. Get the ruler. Okay, better. All the socks are in the drawer, all right? So I'm kind of like a big picture organization guy.
Paul's not in the drawer.
But see, as I've just spent more time understanding, okay, actually, both who I am, but then also how God values the opposite personality of me. How God has created my brother to be the man that he is with the gift sets that he has and personality that he has, it lets me just kind of chill out a second and go, wow, okay, I don't have that. I can't play that club. That's not even in my bag. And whereas it used to really frustrate me that, gosh darn it, you're a P, why won't you get it? We need the list. Where's the list? Now I can go, oh, no, it's actually a beautiful thing to be able to respond and work in this way. Ron.
Did you ever have any struggles with your personality and your parents? Like, for kids here, like, their parents are this and they are this. And how does that play out in a household?
Yeah. I kind of ran with the J crowd in my family, so I didn't necessarily have that same one. I'll defer.
Are you saying just on the P and J or the whole?
No, just kids relating to their parents who are different on personality, different.
Well, actually, I'm
sorry. That's fine. I can, I'll just word vomit here and just. Pizza, potatoes, wood.
That's
a great question.
Or even,
so,
yeah.
But okay, so actually, this is great. So my parents, my mom's more of a J, my dad is more of an F, though he's kind of a J and an F at the same time. But I resonated in a lot of respects with my mother that way. And there were things about dad. I was just going, I don't get that part of you. I can't, and I could never put my finger on it. And it really was even in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years that we've been able to even name some of those things. Like, those, it was just really hard because your personality was such that I felt I didn't have that same piece of you that I could relate to. And but there's also been a beautiful part of that, of being able to honor my parents by realizing, oh, that's how God's made you. And that was a frustrating thing when I was a teenager, but now I'm realizing that's a beautiful thing. because that's the way God's made your personality. I couldn't see it. I didn't have eyes to see it. You processed yet? Maybe not.
I don't know if I processed it.
Light bulbs, fans.
When I don't process, things just come out as like this jumble. I can't like verbally process. So I'm halfway processed here.
Okay.
We'll see if something comes out. There's a lot.
Okay, we're about to wrap up. This has been great. You guys had a lot of good questions. I'll just say this as a lead-in for tomorrow. So we're gonna give you another kind of diagnostic. So first of all, I want you to look at your E's and N's and T's and everything, and then on the sheets that were behind it. Okay, there's some combinations here that I think are just helpful. They're helpful because they both say your strengths. They also say what you tend to have weaknesses in. Read them for both reasons. We're going to give you another one that is looking at your interests and kind of your gifts, because again, God's given you not only your personality, He's also given you the gifts you have, the interests you have, and the talents you have. We're going to do that one. I'll explain that. It's much quicker. Okay, I'll explain that later. God's created us also unique. Scripture's full of unique leaders. We're going to come back to that too. Now, having gone through all of this, we're about to go do a camp challenge. Okay. Here's some practical application from what you just experienced that you can apply in moments and throughout this week. Okay. As you go into your groups, I want you to just be aware you've just been introduced, potentially, or reintroduced to these categories of personality. Be aware of the differences within your group as you're engaging in a game, in a challenge. Okay. Just let that shape you even as you would go into this, all right?